overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
She reminded me that she doesn't turn on the news because she wants to maintain that spacious, empty field of awareness that isn't burdened with opinions and judgments and concerns and fears and everything else that the mind is often known to engage in. And so by starting in the silence begins to reveal to us a deeper sense of who we really are. We're not that which spins around at the circumference of life when things get chaotic, but rather we're the still point at the center of the storm that is consciously breathing in and breathing out. And so I invite you to enter into that still place right now. There's a beautiful line from the Bible that says, "Be still and know that I am God." I often say that. I even chant it sometimes. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know. And in that simple act, I return to this place that I can call home. And when thoughts arise, they're just like storm clouds sometimes. I can witness the clouds in the sky, but know that I am the witness of it, not engaged in it. And there is a freedom then. I can choose whatever thought patterns arise, if I want to follow them or not. And that is the simple beauty of just stopping long enough to remember that we're already free, free from the tyranny of thought. We're already at peace. And I invite you now to just open your heart wide, an open heart that can experience compassion for the suffering that's taking place on the planet. Without getting mired in the suffering, we can have a compassionate heart. A holding place, like Jeff Foster says, where all the frightened children can be held in the heart of the one that knows no other. And you are that heart, and so am I. And when we come together in that awakened heart space, we potentiate it on the planet. It sounds very simple, but it's very profound at the same time. Blessed are the pure in heart, as Jesus said, for they shall see God. And so as we enter into the purity of the heart, we see that everything truly is divine. Even this pandemic is awakening humanity at some deeper level. And when we can hold that too in our heart, it has a way of unwinding itself. It has a way of finding a peaceful homeostasis that is so necessary at this time. So thank you for coming today to be in this heart space with me. And I will attempt to engage the question about walking in wonder and how we can voice the possibilities today that the universe is seeking to reveal to us, through us, as us. Knowing in advance that we are on the dawn of a new horizon we celebrate the coming of the awakened consciousness that has to start within us and ripple out throughout the world. Knowing that it's already done, we just have to catch up with it. There is an abiding gratitude and a faith and a trust and a hope that are restored right there, right now, within us and all around. Know this with me to be so. And in virtual land, say together with me, and so it is. Well, it's strange speaking to virtually an empty room, and yet knowing that there are people out there watching this. And I want to thank you for tuning in. I want to thank those of you who have sent in on PayPal some money to keep the center going. And some of you have used snail mail, and I want to thank you for that as well. Together, we're going to keep this boat afloat, and it's going to be perfect. This is the last in a series of talks that I planned to do months ago called Walking in Wonder, from a little book written by John O'Donohue, a posthumous book that I've been savoring, because it's like fine wine. You want to sip every word that he says, and he's an Irish poet. And he talks about voicing the possibilities that might happen when we awaken out of the fear. And he says, of course, the greatest fear is death. He says, but what even if in death, if we meet the death? And Jeff Foster says this too. What we're really meeting is the life that holds the death, because in truth, spirit never dies. And so our invitation, our challenge, our responsibility is to court this expanded consciousness that is seeking us. Next month, I'm going to be doing this Sunday series on a whole new world, because I'm very clear that we can't go back to whatever normal was. That's not going to work anymore. So when we pray, it's not to say, let things go back to normal. There is no normal. There's going to be a whole new way of being in the world, and it's up to us to discover that. So coming to the center, I've been here for 3 hours. It's like, it feels like a graveyard. I walk to plants and I talk to them and I rotate them and I cut the dead off and I pick some flowers. The irises had fallen over in the garden, so I picked them up and put them in the vase. There's a beautiful pink one here. I'll let Kim take them home with her if she wants at the end of this service. But as I was walking through the bookstore, I came across a book that I bought 10 years ago called Spontaneous Evolution. And it's about having a positive future, how necessary it is. And everybody and their brother is endorsed in saying, this is what we need at these desperate times. Now, mind you, this is over 10 years ago. And at the very opening, they say this. This is by Bruce Lipton. He says, our civilization is presently in a state of disorganization and disintegration. We are currently in dire need of evolutionary advancement, and we don't have time for a slow, gradual evolution. Interestingly, in light of the crisis that we face, it appears that civilization is already in throes of this evolution. And it has to happen with us. He says, perhaps the most burning question that any of us could ask is this a punctuation mark or is this a question mark? An exclamation point? Or sadly, is it a period? People are aware that something is happening on our planet, and they've been exposed to news of diminishing natural resources, of climate change, of population explosion. The doomsday clock is rapidly approaching the midnight hour, and when is it going to be more than love that comes tumbling down? Religious people are even talking about the end times. So at the same time, they say, we are also coming to realize that humanity is all interconnected. If there's any grace that I have found in all of this, is that we're all in this together, and we have to evolve together. The most obvious physical demonstration is the internet, through which we can send and receive messages in a world where we can connect all over. Every Saturday night, to prepare for this Sunday celebration, nobody here, is I listen to Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's speaking to over 120 countries, and over 20,000 people join with him Monday through Friday for an hour, and then you can watch it on YouTube. And you realize that when these people from these different countries raise their hand on Zoom and ask their questions, that we're all going through the same concerns, every one of us. And there's something that's comforting in hearing an Italian woman in Stuttgart, Germany, asking about how she can find what they call, MBSR, mindfulness-based stress reduction, is what John Kabat-Zinn teaches. And this lovely lady that was Italian in Germany with her strange accent, trying to speak English with an Italian German accent, said, I can find that peaceful place when I'm not in pain. But she says, I have severe migraine headaches. And when I'm in those migraines, and when I consider the things that are happening on the planet, I can't go into that peaceful place. I'm coping with my migraine. And so she asked John Kabat-Zinn, can you help me get rid of the migraine so that I can be more established in the peace? And in his beautiful, evolved, compassionate heart space, he said the very act, it's so much like Jeff Foster, if you try to make the migraine the enemy, the migraine gets stronger. What if you could open to the migraine and say, I'm here to hold you. I'm here to listen to you. What is your message? He said, we found in medical science over and over again, when the thing that we're trying to get rid of is held and is honored and is loved, it naturally lets go of the person. So what if these simple little answers are so profound that we can all take? So what is holding on to you? What migraine is gripping you so that you can't find your peaceful place? Lastly, he says, this is a world of relationships. And nobody gets off the bus. We're all in this together. I remember when the AIDS crisis hit in the 80s and everybody was talking about getting rid of the AIDS virus. Well, we've had to learn to live with AIDS. And now there's so many people on the planet that are living with AIDS. So we never may be getting rid of this coronavirus. We may be living with this. Can we do it in a skillful way? That's the question. So he says this, of course, along with this awesome understanding, we realize that the old ways of seeing and believing and reasoning will not help us alleviate our current situation. It's important that we learn to step into the new. Our survival as a species is at stake. We need a new paradigm. We need a spontaneous evolution. And that's why they said they wrote this book, is to help us by exploring nature and how nature naturally evolves. So as big as it is, I'm going to take this to bed with me, and I'm going to see if it inspires within the cockles of my soul some insights where I can then pass them on to you. But ultimately, I know that each one of us has to discover how we evolve. You know, just in coming to the center, when I was 30 years old, my life was falling apart. I realized that it had to fall apart in order for it to come together. And I came to a place where I was hearing empowering ideas that if I changed the way I looked at things, the things I looked at would change. And so what if the responsibility always falls back on us to look through new eyes? So I'm choosing to look at this pandemic as not something that we're trying to get a magic bullet, like it seems everybody wants to do, giving us crazy remedies, which make no sense at all. Instead of saying, this is going to be here for a while. It may be here. People are asking me, when are you going to open the center? The center will open when it's safe to open. Now, I love the fact that maybe a few people can come. We could maybe work with 10 and they could sit around the room and we'll practice our social distancing, because I've learned that I actually miss the people. I miss their eyes looking at me. I miss that exchange of love that I feel when we're together, heart to heart. So it will happen. It'll happen when it's supposed to happen and not before. One of my teachers, Thich Nhat Hanh, had this lovely little saying in his Vietnamese accent. He said, when conditions are right, things manifest. So the whole key there, conditions have to be right. And then we'll get a new sound system. Then we'll have the aisles packed with people. Then we'll, I don't know, then we'll redo the parking lot. I don't know, whatever it is that's imperative to do. But in the meantime, let's try to just see the sacredness of where we are at this holy instant. This Wednesday, on April 22nd, we had Earth Day. It was the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. I remember when Earth Day came on the planet, 1970. And, you know, we had such pollution at the time, and it's as if nobody cared about the planet. So all of a sudden, because of those crazy 60s, and I was one of those people, make love, not war, people started to care about the air that we breathe, and the waters, and the lakes, and the rivers. And here it's 50 years since that time, And I woke up on that Wednesday morning, and on my little Zen calendar in the downstairs bathroom was a saying from Marcus Aurelius, who lived around 50 BC, right around Jesus' time on the planet. And he was a mystic and a sage, and he said, "I arise every morning knowing what a privilege it is to be alive, what a privilege it is to be able to think, to love, to enjoy life." And as I'm sitting reading that little saying from Marcus Aurelius, I read it again and again, what a privilege it is to be alive. You know, we have over 50,000 deaths now in America, and it, chances are it's going to go up. What a privilege it is. I know people in New York City that have the coronavirus, and my heart is going out for so many of them. We're in Alabama, where it's not as apparent, but yet I still notice that when I go around the neighborhood, I'm smiling at my neighbors I didn't even know that I had. It's an amazing thing to witness how we're in this together. And I took my little dog Humphrey to the emergency room where he'd had the herniated disc. They wanted to see him, and they did it in such a mindful way. We sat in the parking lot and we called them on the phone, and then the nurse came out with her mask on, and she remembers Humphrey's being paralyzed from the neck down, and she started talking baby talk to him in the back seat, and he started barking, and she reached in through the back seat and she picked up the pug as if it were her own child, and she held him in her arms, and they said, "He's gotten a little chunky, you might want to weigh him." Well, he gained 7 pounds since he hasn't been getting his exercise, but it didn't matter. He knew that he was loved. And just something as simple as that, scooping him up in her arms, taking him in, letting all the nurses and doctors to see that little paralyzed dog could walk. So what if, you know, it gives us hope that there can be these remissions, there can be these things that are apparently the worst is going to happen, and yet something really beautiful arises out of that. I tend to like to think of the phoenix rising out of the ashes. You know, we're doing this wonderful class by Jeff Foster, and he talks about life sometimes needs to rupture for some of us in order for it to be repaired. So could we see this time as a rupturing in our country, a call for us to listen to nature, to listen to the planet, especially on this 50th anniversary of Earth Day. Our streams are crying out. I was, my little sister who lives in Oregon, she said, they're now seeing the caribou walking on the beaches of Oregon. They haven't seen them in years. In South Africa, the penguins are walking up into the city. They're no longer exiled because the animals now know that the human virus is not so oppressive. So the animals are returning in places they haven't been before. They say in India, you can see the Himalayas, and they haven't been seen in 20 years because the air was so bad. So what if something strange is being shown to us if we have ears to hear? Last week, I listened to Jack Kornfield, and he had just come back from a memorial service to Ram Dass. And he talked about how Ram Dass had evolved in the many years that he had known him. From a Harvard professor to when you saw Ram Dass at the end of his life, he had just become the embodiment of love. Everyone he looked at, he just radiated love toward, because he had become the love itself, and all he saw was the love. And even the stroke that he'd had 20 years ago, he saw it as a gift from his guru, that it humbled him enough that it took him deeper into his own direct experience of his true nature, which is love. So what if this coronavirus, this pandemic, is paradoxically taking us into our own evolution, our own transformation, our own willingness to see life differently? This month, this series of talks, I started off by talking about the holding place, that we're here to move from a healing place to a holding place. And I got a lot of this idea from Jeff Foster in the class that we're teaching. He says, all any of us really ever wants is to be held and to be heard. I remember when I studied with him right after my heart attack 2 years ago, and the very first words that came out of his mouth, he said, what a privilege it is that we're sitting here, that we're alive. And of course, he really spoke directly to me, because the first words I heard after the procedure was, you shouldn't be here. You had the Widowmaker, and you know, you're a rare bird sitting here. And so I don't take it for granted that I am alive, and what a privilege it is to be alive. And as I proceeded to go through this week-long study with Jeff Foster, what arose for me was an exiled little child that I had somehow shamed and growing up so that I could put on this face to the world that was together and wasn't vulnerable and wasn't fearful. Well, this little fearful boy came up, and the advice that he gave us at that retreat was, if something arises for you, ask it what it wants. And so when that little exile boy came up at me, I said, what do you want? And he says, I want you to hold me. And I've been holding him ever since. And he doesn't leave now because he has a place within me. So what if the invitation is to hold those parts of ourself, not just with ourselves, but with our community that need to be held? So the first week I spoke about that holding space. Then the second week I talked about the great opening. There's a wonderful little chant we do at the Circle of Love Gathering, and it goes like this. I am opening, my heart is ready to receive. And you do that again and again, I am opening. And as the heart opens, it can receive so much more that the mind can't conceptualize. It can receive intimacy, you know, that beautiful word, into me see. And when we look into the eyes of another, what we're really seeing is a reflection of our own self. So what if the ability to open to the heart is going to show us that we have been shut down from that place for fear that we might get a broken heart again? But what I've learned is that the broken heart is an open heart. So it may have to break a few times, but that's okay. I shared with you in the last few weeks that we have these robins that nested on the front porch in the flower pot, and then they were nesting in that in the Mahonia Beali in the back walkway, and it's right as you enter into the back patio. So every time you'd walk back there, you would frighten the mother bird and she'd flop. So I've been very, very careful to be mindful of the birds. We had these storms. Every day I check to see if the baby's okay. The babies are fine. Last Wednesday morning on Earth Day, Trey woke up early, and there were three baby Carolina wrens that had been fledging, and they were hopping around the back patio. Wrens are those little tiny birds with the tails that stick up and the little beak, and they're very loud. And these are three little Carolina wrens. Well, I went to look for my robins, and they were gone. They had flown the coop, here today, gone tomorrow, on the front porch, in the back patio, and I never got to see them leave, but I did get to see the baby wrens. So I'm working in the garden, and I'm taking care of things, and I noticed in the water bucket, from the pouring down rain, that one of the baby wrens had fallen into the bucket and she had drowned. Well, I went through my moments of grief because they were my little baby birds. So I scooped up the baby bird and he went to the back garden, and I had a little grave for it. I put her under the white lilac bush named Betsy Ross, and I put that little baby wren in there, and I said, you know, your life matters to me. And it was just, I'm sharing this because we're all interconnected. And maybe the good news is the robins are all fine and they flew the coop and they're happy as clams. And two of the three baby wrens, I'm sure, made it. It's just the one that didn't. You know, when we walk down by Big Springs Park, I'll notice that the ducks and the geese are giving birth. And one day you'll see like 15 little baby ducks waddling after the mother. And you come back a day later and there are eight. And you know, you can wonder what happened to the other seven, but I've learned to bless the ones that survive. And sometimes I'll just see one little duck left, and I'll waddle over to that duck and I say, you're a survivor, and I'm here to root you on, you know, and this is life. It can be tough. So yeah, it's a privilege to be alive on this planet. I'll give you a last little taste of John O'Donohue, since this is in tribute to him. He talks about possibility, and we're talking about possibility today. Voicing the possibilities. And he says, a good axiom in life is to try to see all the possibilities in your situation. Huh. Now, Ernest Holmes in The Science of Mind, when he spoke about the universe, it's interesting, he used a synonym for the universe of what we would call God. And the synonym he used is the totality of possibilities. So what if, and then in his writings, Dr. Ernest Holmes said, the whole purpose of spiritual practice is to know yourself in God, as God. He says not, and he says even to say in God implies that there's God and man, and that's duality, but to know yourself as of God. And he says, imagine the possibilities if we knew that the divine mind was using our mind and divine love was flowing through our hearts. That divine love would see every little bird as our child, not just the humanoids, but the winged ones, and they're all our children. So here goes John O'Donohue. Often in a situation, It is the outer that we see. Perhaps it's the walls that we see, or it's the door where the key has been thrown away. That's what we see. And we never see there's a window of possibilities and the places where thoughts and feelings can grow. This Sunday, I'm inviting us all to look to the windows of possibilities that the pandemic is revealing to us. Jack Kornfield, he went into his own little inquiry method, and he's a Buddhist teacher. And he said, I asked myself, what would be the message of the pandemic that it's saying to me? And he said, I sat in meditation, and he says, what came in me was, we need a global healthcare plan. Everybody needs to be safe when you got a pandemic. You don't need to say, do you have insurance? No. With or without it, you get tended. So he was listening for what's the message. John O'Donohue says, how we view the future actually shapes the future. How we view the future actually shapes the future. I see people talking about this pandemic and calling it a war and wanting it to be over. And I'm realizing maybe that's not the way to see it. Maybe it's to see we're going to be different now. We're going to be loving each other at a distance. We're going to be, I wonder if we're going to shake hands anymore, or if we're going to be conscious that we're carriers of germs. So I think there's a graciousness that I've noticed even going to the supermarket. When I go into Fresh Market, they ask that you pack your own bag. And I'm more than happy to pack it. I don't have the acumen as a bag packer that other backpackers have. But I said, I'm happy to pack my bag if that makes you feel safe. And then I find myself complimenting her mask, and she would tell me how her grandmother made the mask, and how she says, you know, I'm frightened being on the edge, on the line here. But she said, I feel it's my job to show up. And so what if it's changing how we relate to one another? He said, time comes toward us unshapen predominantly, and it is our expectation that shapes the time that is coming. The very first lesson I learned when I was 30 years old, and I walked in, this is 41 years ago, I came into the Religious Science Center in Atlanta. He says, you don't get in life what you want. You get in life what you expect. He's saying the same thing. So are we expecting the worst from this? Or are we expecting that this is the wake-up call for humanity? I'm choosing to see the latter, that this is going to awaken humanity to our oneness. So we're going to care for each other. I'm seeing it all over the planet. I'm seeing it with the animals. They had a retrospective on Jane Goodall. She's the woman that went over to Africa and she studied the great apes. And she made the mistake, probably Kim Brown would have made the same mistake, because she says, when I went into the colony of the great apes, I gave them names. And she said, as a scientist, you're supposed to give them a number. And she said, later they found that I was right. She says, by giving them names, I gave them qualities of sentience, that they had feelings, that they had relationships. They weren't just a stupid animal that to be given a number, but they actually were animals with feelings that cared for one another. And she says, I like to think that by me giving them a name, I helped them live longer lives. Anyway, she says, it is our expectation that shapes the time that is coming. So expectation creates our future. And if you bring creative expectation to your future, no matter what difficulty may lie and wait for you, you will be able somehow to transfigure it. Whereas if you bring a really negative expectation to your future, you will turn yourself totally into a tower of misery. So he finally says, there's great wisdom in perspective and distance. It is usually when we are myopic, that means when it's right in front of your face. He says, it's usually when we're myopic and close up to a thing that we can't see its contour at all, that it totally imprisons us and controls us. But whereas sometimes when you step back and you get another view, you can pick up a way of relating to the event or the situation which frees you predominantly. You know, I mentioned before that in the 80s when the AIDS crisis hit, it was really devastating to the gay community and to people all over the world. But the grace and the good that came out of that was that people started to see them as human beings, gay people, not just an aberration to be abhorred. And it opened the hearts of humanity. I was part of that. And so when you step back from what appears to be a disaster or a catastrophe, some greater good can come out of this. And that's what I'm going to know with this pandemic. It's been a long time in the coming. We got warning signs with Ebola and swine flu. And now that it's arrived, we can't be totally surprised. And it's something to do with how we deal with our animals, the inhumanity. And I'm hoping, and I love the word hope, that we can see the sacredness in those wet markets in China where we can ban the way we treat some of the animals. I have calendars all over the center from rescue organizations that Trey and I belong to, and there's one in the men's room from PETA, and it's about how we can help the elephants. It's not just the elephants, it's not just the polar bears, it's all life on this planet is crying out for an evolved species that says, we're in this together, you're not alone, and I'm going to care for you, just like I cared for that little bird. So yeah, could we walk in wonder? How can I? And then ask the question, how would God respond here? There are these lovely little bracelets that some of the Christians wear, WWJD, what would Jesus do? I like to say, what would love do here? You know, how would love respond in the middle of a pandemic? St. Francis of Assisi, he would walk through the leprosy, was virulent when he was on the planet, and he would hold the lepers in his arms. He wasn't afraid. You know, and of course, leprosy is not something you catch from another, but at the time they didn't know that. But his heart was so big that he would hold them in his arms. It requires that level of consciousness that can step into a frightening place and say, I'm here, at whatever level. Even if it's a young girl at Publix wearing a flowered face mask that her grandmother made her, she's saying, I'm here. I'm here to smile at you, even the smiles under my mask, and to let you know that I see you. So Jon Kabat-Zinn, I watched him last night, and this young man from Egypt asked him a question about emptiness and spaciousness. And he says, you mentioned that in consciousness, what we really are is this spacious, awake awareness. We're not the local mind that has these tormenting thoughts. And he says, you mentioned emptiness and spaciousness. Could you clarify that? And I loved his simple response. He said, in Buddhism, they talk about all life is empty. And what they're saying is, if you look deeply, even in your eyes in a mirror, you won't find a me there. There's just life there looking back at life. And so what we're empty of is the separate self. There is no separate me and you. And I love this little sign that I see in Five Points where I live that says, let's move from me to we. You know, this is about all of us. It's not about me having something better and then others not having. So could we know that the emptiness means I'm empty of my own separate self? Then I am every dog and I am every little bird and I am every tree. It's all me. I am the elephant that wants to survive. You know, I remember when they had this tsunami over there in Asia, I would see things, miraculous things like a great tortoise befriending a hippopotamus. And here's a baby hippopotamus following a great tortoise. And the tortoise decided it was going to adopt that hippo and they were going to go through life. See, miraculous things do happen. There was this YouTube video that I watched. I love these animal things that people send me. And there was a lady, I think in Washington State, and she lived in the country and her old dog went out and she heard this cry out in nature. And it was a mother deer that had died and there was a baby fawn. And so she brought the fawn home and the old dog raised the fawn as her child. They would sleep in the dog bed together. And that fawn grew up to be a deer. And ultimately, because she lived in the country, when she got old enough, she left the home. And later on, she said, later that summer, that deer came back with her own fawn to show her mother, the dog, that she was bringing her baby back to her. And she said, when you watch them, she says that the deer wanted to play with the dog, so she tried to do the dog play, and the dog wanted to play with the deer, so she tried to play like a deer. So they were trying to do each other's language. And as I'm watching this deer and this dog having this intimate relationship, bringing her baby fawn to the mother dog, I realized there's hope for the human species. If a dog can do it, maybe we can. Yeah, so empty of me. That's what the emptiness is. And when we find that there's no me there, there's just a spacious field of love that can love with equanimity. It's all life. And life is intelligent. Life knows what it's doing. And life right now is telling us that we're out of whack. Jon Kabat-Zinn was teaching the Four Noble Truths last night, and the first noble truth in Buddhism is that all life is suffering, and he used some kind of Sanskrit word. And basically what he's saying is, we're out of whack. The planet is suffering right now. It's out of whack. And what we get to do is to find that still point, to find that open-hearted awareness, and we get to hold the suffering on the planet. We do it in virtual world. That doesn't mean we have to hug every suffering child, but we can know that every child, we can take them into our heart because we have the heart of the universe within us. Literally, the heart of the universe lives within each one of us, just like the mind of the universe does. So what would your life, ask yourself the possibility, if you could know that Kim Brown has the heart of the universe, and that every animal that comes through her in Friends of Rescues is coming to be seen and loved and to be uplifted and potentiated. Not to told you're a lowly loser and you're going to die in the pile because there's too many of you on the planet. No, there's room enough for you because I see you and I love you. And you're something. You matter. Boy, it would completely change, wouldn't it? The rainforests matter. The trees matter. We've been having a discussion with our neighbor lady. She doesn't like trees for some reason. She thinks they should be cut down, that they could fall on her house. And you know, I just have a hard time understanding how some people can actually have a prejudice against a tree. It's amazing. Then the third question came from a young man in England, and he said, I've been listening to you, Jon Kabat-Zinn, for many, many years. I was one of your early students at Omega. And he said, what is it like to be you? To know that you're affecting so many people with your work. And I loved his reflective answer. And he went back and he says, you know, my father was a scientist, and I grew up in a household that said, believe science over the pablum of your religions. And he says, my mother was an artist, but he says she was never a fulfilled artist in the world. In fact, she had her first art show at age 100, so it took her a time to get her art show shown. But he said, they showed me the possibility by having loving parents that, he said, I went into science, but I also found that I had an artistic side. And then when I went to college and I started studying Buddhism, I realized the spiritual piece was there. So what if we're all a work in progress? We're all an evolution, and the totality of possibilities come out when they're ready to come out. Come out, wherever you are. Within each one of us is a genius. And when the genius speaks, wisdom comes out. Within each one of us, there's an artist. And when the artist plays, creativity comes out. So what if we could know this for everyone out there? Every child is a burgeoning genius, an artist, and scientist. All we have to do is to see the potential and call it forth. I remember early on, certain things kind of are like eye-openers, and one was this little saying from Goethe. And Goethe said, if you label somebody, you limit them. But if you see their possibilities, you're literally calling them forth. So what if we could see the possibility, the potential in one another and call it forth, and not label someone as a loser or whatever these labels that we want to give the world? And it starts right there within us. Could we know that there's a possibility for some creative genius to flower within us if we give it permission to do that? So, let's see. So love is intelligence. And life is intelligent, and it knows what it's doing. So I ask myself, what is the universe telling me here in this time? What is the highest truth for us to know? And what expectation can we cultivate? Ralph Waldo Emerson said, prayer is the contemplation of the facts with the highest point of view. Well, we all know what the facts are on the planet right now. The question is, what is the highest point of view? Could I cultivate that highest point of view, knowing that the expectations, that the potential and the possibility that I'm calling forth could be the salvation of the planet, salvation of humanity? And so I go in my bag of tricks, what has worked for me, and I find myself going back. I made a list of little things that I do, and I'm starting to realize that there is, when it's always about me, it's kind of a selfish approach to the universe. You know, how can I have more money, more success, more fame, more love? Because there really is no me separate from you. So what if when I move from me to you, the question then, how can we all be safe? How can we all be peaceful? The brotherhood of humanity. How can we all know our potential and let it flower? How could we all give birth? And we're in a birthing time right now on the planet, a birthing time of Homo universalis, of this new evolved way of being, the interconnectedness of human to animal and to this planet. It's our mother. So to ask that question, how could it no longer be about me? Because, you know, the self-help movement, and I love what Jeff Foster said, and, you know, we come out of the self-help teaching. You know, change your thinking, change your life, have a positive attitude. And there's nothing wrong with all that. I actually love that way of approaching life. The trouble is, as Jeff Foster says, the greatest self-help teaching is there is no self to help. He's saying the same thing. There is no you. And he says, and if you want to keep making a better version of you, you're creating a better illusion. a better false facade of who I think I am. Am I pretty enough for you? Am I handsome enough for you? Am I smart enough for you? Am I successful enough for you? You know, am I wealthy enough for you? Am I spiritual enough for you? No, I'm not. But there's something that is. And that something that is what I am and what you are. And when I stop making it about me, life gets so much bigger. And I think we're called to see that this is about all of us. You know, God belongs to all of us. There's Michael would play music and we can't get our music system to work, but there was one song by Carl Anthony that I loved. He says, we are one people living on one planet, the people of love. One people living on one planet. He says, instead of building walls between us, could we build bridges of understanding, bridges of compassion, bridges of how can I help you? When I was a brand new minister at age 40, I had a little saying up in my office at the other place where we had the center. And it says, you don't have to make all the world's mistakes. You can learn from other people. It was Admiral Rickover that wrote that. And I remember as a young minister, I didn't want to make the same mistakes that I witnessed other ministers making. And I'm thinking with this pandemic, we could learn from other countries what they're doing, how successes, they're creating success, how they're interspiriting, how they're keeping their people safe, how they're testing. We can learn from them. We don't have to be number one. We can learn from this vast field of our brothers and sisters. What's working? You know? And I'm all for that. This virtual kind of ministry is kind of fun. I'm missing the form, but, you know, imagine if I could speak to 20,000 people like Jon Kabat-Zinn in 120 countries. I'd have no delusions that would ever be my future, but boy, could we really spread the message. The second thing, I think that I'm seeing the possibility of a kinder world. A kinder world. His Holiness the Dalai Lama says, my religion is kindness. Walking around the neighborhood, people are helping each other. The neighbor lady says, can I go to the grocery store? Do you need anything? Just little things done with great love. I'm seeing that people are actually becoming kinder. And, you know, I love that little Karen Drucker song, and it's something that I've been working with myself and then reaching out to others. The little song says, I will be gentle with myself. I will be gentle with myself like a newborn baby child. And I'll only go as fast as the slowest part of me feels safe to go. Yes, I'll only go as fast as the slowest part of me feels safe to go. So it takes courage to come out and sit in the back of the church when you're told not to see other people. But yet she wants to give me her love, and I feel that I'm just sitting back there. There's something about the human connection, a kinder world. I've been doing the loving kindness meditations, and this comes out of the Buddhist tradition. And it's very important to understand the progression in the loving kindness meditation. It starts off with self. How does it go? Let's see. May I be peaceful. May I be happy. May I be well. You know, may I be filled with loving kindness. And so it starts within yourself. And then they say, think of someone that you love, a friend, and start, may you be peaceful. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and free. May you be happy. It's easy to do the ones we love. Then maybe your neighbors, may you be filled. And, you know, and as you do this, you're creating a field of kindness. You're letting it ripple out. May we all be filled with loving kindness. Every species on the planet. May we all be well. The two-leggeds, the four-leggeds. May we be happy. May we be peaceful and at ease. To really voice the possibility that this could come. It starts within our knowing first, and then it ripples out into the world. So it starts with you and me, by being part of the solution, not part of the problem. To live in the solution, not the problem. To live in this emerging consciousness of kindness and gentleness. It's necessary now. I ask then, how can we skillfully navigate this life safely? And then I wrote down in my little notes this morning, the way out of the pandemic is through the pandemic. It's not about getting rid of it. It's about opening to it. And so I'm going to pull out little Jeff Foster for Kim, because I know she loves him like I do. And this is what he said about the way out of a problem is to go through the problem. The way out of the wound is to go into the wound. And he does it in a very poetic way. And I hope that you can hear the beauty of his words in your heart. He said, a wound, and we're in a wounded time right now, is a portal. It will not kill you when you turn toward it. I have known horrors within myself that have pushed me to the edge of sanity, to the edge of my own mortality. I have touched into a grief, and I know Michael has, so unbearable that it felt like my heart couldn't hold one more second of it. And I felt a rage so volcanic that I thought it would destroy or create an entire cosmos. So he's saying these emotions will arise. But moment by moment, he said, I was able to bear the unbearable. I was able to accept the unacceptable, to fall in love with my own inner enemy. Now, Jesus, in all his wisdom, would say to love the enemy, to love those who do harm for you, because Jesus recognized there is no outer. What we do is we project the inner enemy out onto the world, and we want to blame him. There is no blaming in oneness. He says, an enemy that turned out to be my own innocent inner child who was screaming and raging for my own love. My own flesh and blood was not an enemy or an alien, but was a sweet part of myself. This understanding has changed my life forever. Get off the battlefield first with yourself, then with your neighbor, then with the world. They're not your enemy. I don't care what political party you're for or against, what religion you're for or against. It's all you. So he goes on to say, and especially the parts that we're calling our enemy. Last week I shared with you Byron Katie. She says, anytime I say that they're the problem, I have to realize I'm the problem. Because in my mind, I've made them the problem, and all I live with is my mind. When my mind gets clear there is no them from me, then I'm no longer the problem, and I no longer make them the problem. Can you hear me on that one? He says, at the core of my deepest trauma, I saw my own kind little face smiling back at me. I found power and courage that I never knew that I had. I found the ultimate safety. I found God herself. She had used my deepest wounds, her own wounds, to call me back to myself, to herself. As I was reading that, I thought, what if this is the pandemic calling us back to embrace this suffering that's happening on the planet? It's not a bad problem out there. It has to be an existential problem that's solved within us. And when we solve it within ourselves, it'll be solved in the world. He says, this is here to restore me to my wholeness. No more separation. He says, traumas that we experience are like a black hole. It will suck the life out of us and everyone around us if we try to run away from it. But trauma can also be a quasar, an astonishing dynamo for new life, fueled by this blackness, emitting more light than 20 galaxies. So out of the darkness, light, and out of the pain, joy, and out of the alchemical fire of transformation can come the gold. So I find that very hopeful, to know that out of this pandemic can come a species of humanity that's going to be kinder to animals, more mindful how we relate to one another, recognizing that we have certain inalienable rights, and I think healthcare should be one of those for all people on the planet, for all animals. If they're sick, they can go. And, you know, when I took Humphrey in with the herniated disc, she says, well, that'll be, I think it was $7,500 for the operation. And I handed her my credit card. And I thought, what do poor people do that don't have that $7,000? I want every little dog or cat that has a herniated disc to be able to walk again, just like Humphrey did. It shouldn't be just for the guy that had the gold credit card can pass it over. Everybody should have the same right. That's just me on my soapbox about equality for all. And so the joy of true meditation would say, meditate on what is right now. It's not about running to your zafu, your little cushion, and turning off all extraneous noise and finding a forced sense of silence. I remember saying to my friend Wanda Gale that if you can't meditate in Atlanta's Hartsfield Airport with all that chaos, because it would be now easy to do, you can't meditate at all. We need to be able to, whatever life brings us, to find that center still point. You know, in the midst of chaos, when I found baby Speck at the pound in Hiawassee, Georgia, she was only 12 weeks old, and she was in a cage, and with all these other dogs, and they were all hyperactive and barking, and there was poop everywhere, and she was sitting like the little Buddha dog that she was, just sitting with poop all around her, looking like a little angel. And I had said to the universe, I want a dog like Papa Speck. And she was the spitting image, and Jody Rutenberg picked her up and threw her in my arms and said, you made a demand on the universe, and here she is. And truly, it was one of those moments. And so in the midst of all that chaos, it is possible to see the Buddha shining through. That's just another metaphor. I happen to like it a lot. So yeah, to have the totality of possibilities show up in you and me in our lives and to say what they might look like. So here's your assignment for this week. To tend your own garden. And by that I mean your inner garden and your outer garden. And they all are a reflection of each other. So when you look at the world, you're not seeing the world as it is, you're really seeing it as you are. So when the world looks beautiful to you, even with all this pandemic going on, that's because something is flowering within you that's seeing the beauty shining back. And for the Mother Earth, on her 50th birthday, I invite you to do something with nature, because nature is our mother, and she has a way of communicating to us in ways that are so much more profound. I find that she's the best medicine. I've been taking a lot of refuge in my animals and in my garden, in the trees and the flowers and the seedlings. I even have some little tomato plants. Did you want one of my tomato plants for your garden? You know? No? Anyway, they're all going to find homes soon, and they're all... I found some old pumpkin seeds that I put in a little pot, and they're coming up, so I'm going to plant pumpkin seeds in the garden. I have some little purple cayenne pepper plants for Trey, and they're already starting to bloom, and each flower is bright purple. And then I can imagine cayenne peppers coming down. And you know, there's something uniquely beautiful about seeing something grow. My friend Kim sent me a photograph of a lovely flower growing on a mailbox, and it's a clematis. And they're really beautiful flowers that are difficult to grow because their roots need to be shaded and their faces need to be in the bright sun. And unless you know that, it's a challenge for you to grow that plant. But when you do know that and you give them the right conditions, they have a way of responding to or corresponding to what you do. So the invitation is to participate in this relational world that we're having with the planet, with ourselves, with our family, with our neighbors. With the pandemic, you know, the pandemic is here. This virus is here, and it's how we respond to it that is up to us. Finally, the last thing I wanted to do is to read you a prayer by Mark Nepo. And he's a man that lives in his heart. And he went through the fires of transformation twice with cancer. Both times he wasn't expected to live. Both times he came back a transformed individual. And once he did, he found himself blessing the very thing, the very trauma, just like Jeff Foster did, because it gave him a different way of seeing life. And it's that kind of vision that I feel that we need to have now. A vision that is transformed through the suffering, no longer identifying with it, but being able to engage with it in a way that is loving, so that it can no longer chase us around like the boogeyman. So here's his lovely little prayer. It's called Earth Prayer. And after I share this, I'll go into my own prayer. This is really beautifully done. This is how he invokes the universe. He says, O endless creator, force of life, seat of the unconscious, Dharma, Atman, Ra, Gulb, dear center of love, Christ light, Yahweh, Allah, Mawu, mother of the universe. It doesn't matter what you call it. He says, let us, when swimming with the stream, become the stream. And let us, when moving with the music, become the music. And let us, when rocking the wounded, become the suffering. Let us live deep enough till there is only one direction, and slow enough till there is only the beginning of time, and loud enough in our hearts till there is no need to speak. Let us live for the grace beneath all that we want. Let us see it in everything and in everyone, till we admit to the mystery that when I look deeply into you, I find me. And when you dare to hear my fears in the recesses of your heart, you recognize it as your secret, which you thought no one else knew. Oh, let us embrace that unexpected moment of unity. As the atoms of God, let us have the courage to hold each other when we break and worship what unfolds. Let us have the courage to hold each other when we break and worship what unfolds. O nameless spirit, that is not done with us yet, let us love without a net, beyond the fear of death, until that speck of peace we guard so well becomes the world. O nameless spirit, that is not done with us yet, let us love without a net, beyond the fear of death, until the speck of peace that we guard so well becomes the world. So I invite you to close your eyes if you're comfortable and to feel that speck of peace that's right there within you as you. Eckhart Tolle calls this peace, this stillness, the language of God. And so as we move into this stillness, this peace, this emptiness, we notice it's empty of me, and yet it's full of peace. And this same emptiness, this same peace, this same spaciousness, this same open-hearted awareness exists throughout the universe. It is so desperately needed on planet Earth right now, and it needs to come through you and me. So I invite you to offer yourself as a conduit. A conduit is an opening. It is a spacious opening for peace to abide. And make a vow to yourself. I give you my peace to the world. I have no greater gift to give. May my heart be your shelter. May my eyes give you hope. May my smile bring you joy. May you know you're deeply loved. We say this to the whole world, for indeed you are. We say this to the world, I shall always do my best. I choose you now as my own beloved self, as we journey this path of love together. As one life, living on one planet, here to love one another. It starts with you and me. I accept this as my birthright, to be that. So take a deep integrating breath and give a sigh for the divine. Ah. Let's say the heart salutation together in virtual land. Say with me up there, I honor you. I respect you. I love you. You are an aspect of myself. The beloved in me bows to the beloved in you. In this place, we are one. And now in true ritual fashion, lift up your little fingers. And let your fingers affirm, and so it is. I'll see you guys there.
Listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. You are love and you are light. Namaste. Yeah, yeah.